I didn't talk to Dave before my lesson, about my lesson. And so then I'm thinking, did he look very, very closely at the outline? Maybe, maybe not. Did he look at the title? God created people as women and man, or woman and man. And so you might be thinking, well, what's so controversial about that? Well, it's become quite controversial. And I've talked a little bit about it, made allusions to it over the past month or so. And it's something that I'm quite concerned about, particularly for our children, because there's some very subtle things that are going on that are trying to convince us that the world is not as it really is. In the beginning, we know that God did create man and woman. And in times past, we, in effort to defend that principle, have taught about how marriage is between a man and a woman. And that's pretty well resolved in our culture, that's okay, even though that's not really what the Bible teaches, obviously, but it's become accepted. If you can remember, at the beginning of the presidential election, when President Obama was elected, he was a proponent of marriage between a man and a woman, and he made some sort of transformation in that regard, and then by the end of his term, the people who are proponents of that message have pretty much had their way, and it's been accepted. In fact, you're considered a pretty bad person if you speak out against it. As I said this morning, we call it being homophobic. And what's happening now is taking the next step. And if you'll notice there in the outline, I say currently there's a strong move toward our culture becoming a gender-neutral society. I'll put it as simply as I can, is that it's time to stop doing what's called the gender binary. We need to stop talking about men and women making up society. That's just too specific. There's too many areas in there that demand that we just get away from that kind of thinking. And again, you might think, well, how does that happen? And again, it's become a very subtle thing. And I think many of our children have come to accept, I suppose, the idea that, well, you know, people aren't able to be involved in heterosexual relationships because just the way they were born or whatever they've been told or whatever they happen to have learned about relationships that promote marriage. And they pretty much accept a lot of our younger folks in the congregation have come to understand that and say, well, I guess, you know, that's all right because they can't help it. And, of course, that's a gross oversimplification because you can help a lot of things. Depends on what you want to try to glorify in life. When we're talking about gender, this is kind of an interesting thing. I say, to where does gender equality or neutrality take us? And again, if you understand the principle that I'm saying, and I'm not purposely trying to be controversial. I'm just saying I think this is something about which we need to be informed and to realize, you know, what's happening. And it won't be long until I'm afraid that the same attitude toward people who oppose gay marriage is going to be the same attitude that is going to be presented to us by those who promote gender neutrality. So where does it take us? And that is, there's no distinction between men and women. And of course, if that's true, that pretty much resolves the issues regarding gay marriage. Because if there's no distinction between men and women, why should marriage be limited to a woman marrying a man, since we really shouldn't really have the idea of man and women as a part of our thinking? And then, of course, I say, why should it then matter what restrooms you use? You see, this is where this is, I want you to understand that the way this is presented to us is that there are young people who are a bit confused about who they are, and they get picked on if they go into one restroom or another, and so we have to do something about this. This just isn't right. And generally, this is the way this has been working in our culture. You victimize someone, and then somebody's got to fix what victimizes them. Well, this whole restroom thing is not just about our concern for confused young people. And we all have sympathy for that. But this, the greater goal by these people who advocate this, and they're the ones who are really pushing this, is they believe there just shouldn't be men and women restrooms. Period. Now, I realize that culture is not what we want it to be. It never has been and never will be. I get that. And so I'm not sitting here trying to go on some sort of campaign to put a stop to this. I realize how we are in a position to where there are just certain things we have to accept. But I do want us to at least be able to know what's going on. And giving you my perspective is hopefully going to be helpful in that regard. And also then to be very aware at some of the things your kids may hear at school. Things that they might become expected to just believe and to accept. But when you see what I've written down here, that if there is no distinction, then that affects a lot of things. And I will say this, particularly for those who have fought for women's rights over the years. This is where this whole issue is getting kind of confused in many people's minds. Because if we're going to do away with these distinctions between men and women, then why should we try to make things better for women? And the logical consequence of this is that women's rights ends up taking a back seat. In fact, to show you how this whole bigoted thing can kind of work its way around, there were some girls who believed that they wanted their dorm to stay just female. And so when they protested or made some sort of application to keep it that way, what happened was that they began to be called bigots. Why and how could you prevent men from becoming a part of your dorm? Because there's really no distinction. And this is the problem. These are the kind of things we have to break down. We're going to talk about some of these as we go on. Now, I think that one of the very simple principles, we know God made us this way. There are physical, anatomical things that separate men and women. Now, are some people more masculine than others or more feminine than others? Of course. There's no arguing that. You've heard me state that when I talked about the whole issues related to gay marriage. The things that make us different can't be changed, the physiological things, although there are people who are trying to do that, even though it makes it very difficult for them, much more difficult than what people thought. But understanding them can help us to build a better and more just society that gives both men and women the chance to live freely and authentically. So the desire of these folks, who are the ones who are really behind the whole restroom thing, I just want you to understand that. The designs of these folks is that we have to do away with these distinctions between men and women. And again, you may think that that's kind of radical and, oh, there can't be that many people out there thinking that. It's very much the part of the thinking behind the whole, let's have neutral, sexless, if you will, restrooms. But what we ought to be able to do is to recognize that we are different and continue to try to make life better for men and women. The solution, though, seems to be that the only way that that's going to happen with these folks, these advocates, is that we just got to do away with the distinctions. The whole idea of sex and gender. Most of us understand that sex or sexuality refers to the anatomical and physiological traits that define men and women. Gender, on the other hand, this is the new buzzword. Gender refers to the socially constructed roles. And you usually will hear people talk about gender issues. They don't talk about sex issues. Gender refers to socially constructed roles, behaviors, activities, and attributes that a society deems appropriate for men and women. And according to these folks, this is where we've all gone wrong. It breaks down also to male and female, their sex categories, while masculine and feminine are gender categories. So what the gender thing, the difference between sex and gender, is that sex does describe the anatomical. I mean, technically speaking, that's how it used to always be. I have evidence as to when that changed. I'm going to present to you in a second. But what makes someone male or someone female or masculine or feminine all has to do with society. That society makes people that way. And, of course, the reason behind that, what we're told, is the whole idea, this whole patriarchal way men have been put in charge and they decide what it means to be a man and they decide what it means to be a woman. They always overstate the power of men. I mean, any man understands that we don't have nearly as much power as these people advocate. But what we're talking about here is let's get rid of the distinctions. And that's the terms. When did sex become, or when it became gender? When did people start using this? So it goes is that D.H. Lawrence wrote a famous novel. I can't really think of it. It's Lady Chatter. What is it, Lady? Anyone know what that is? Lady Chatterley's? Yeah. That was such a rage back in the early 50s and was so erotic, I guess would be the best way, that people, for some reason, they started referring to sex then as things related to erotic activity. And so people began to think of sex, not the difference between man and woman. We used to talk about, the war of the sexes. Everybody understood what that meant, men versus women. Well, that word started to be used differently. And so now the men versus women thing, you'll hear people generally refer to gender issues. I remember watching some sports talk show and some coach had been taken, I suppose, in some sort of criticism because he said something about, if we can't rough it up a little bit, we'll just end up being like girls or something like that. Some stupid little remark that, people didn't used to get very bothered with. And there was just an uproar. And the way I heard it discussed was, it's one thing to criticize the team, but to bring gender into this, is something that's really, really problematic. And so we've gotten to this point where we're just all so sensitive about these things. And the way, this is what happens, as you get older. All this stuff changes in a way to where you just feel like you just can't keep up with it half the time. What am I supposed to say? What am I not supposed to say? As we say, what's politically incorrect? What's correct? Well, how did it all start biblically? Well, we know what God's intention was in the beginning. Genesis 1:26 said, "Let us make man in our image according to our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over the cattle and over all the earth. And over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. God created man in his own image, and in the image of God he created him. Male and female, he created them." And men and women have things on their bodies that indicates what they are. That's the way God made us. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the sky and over every living thing that moves on the earth." We are very familiar with that passage. And when you think about how the whole creation picture develops, notice the two distinct individuals that are there as a part of the creation can blend to be one. That was the whole idea. Not that they were unique and should be separate from one another, but that they come together and they blend as people. The Lord said that it's not good for a man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him, or someone who complements him or is able to work well with him. Man and woman. The woman does not have to become a man, nor does the man have to become a woman. The two can work together. That's the way God always intended it. When the man is presented with the woman that was created out of his body, it says, "The man said, 'This is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man.'" She's like me. She's not totally like me, but she's really like me, and we can become one. And so it goes on to say in verse 24, "For this reason a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." So the whole idea in creation was God creates man and woman. They mutually affect one another in a positive way. That's the whole idea. And then the world can grow and the world can develop. But this new construct, and that's a word that you hear a lot when talking about the world as it is. The reason why men are the way they are is because this construct or this construction of a concept that has been placed there because of man's desire to dominate. And so, again, you got to understand that people who advocate this view don't have much respect for the Bible. So, we can sit there and quote Bible's verses to them, and it may not mean a whole lot to them because they just think that that's part of the problem. They really believe, many of them, that the Bible is part of really what's taking things in a very, very wrong direction. But the new reality is called gender reality, or the new gender reality of gender neutrality. And here's how it's described. And this is by a lady, I don't think, who was advocating the position. She had written an article about it. And here's what she said. humans of both sexes would be liberated if we recognize that while gender is indeed an internal, innate, essential facet of our identities, there are more genders than just a woman and a man to choose from. What does that mean? The next step on the path of liberation is the recognition of new range of gender identities. So now we have people referring to themselves. Now these, there are, this just gives you a few. But one particular handbook on this subject gives you 70 different male-female descriptions. Rather than male-female, we've got to really break it down. And each one of these categories need to be respected. So what are they? Genderqueer, non-binary. You know, you turn your back on the two man-woman system. Pangender, polygender, or gender, demi-boy, or demi-girl, or neutrois, or aporagender, or lunagender, or quantum gender. Vocabulary is a really big deal here. I just want you to understand this. We'll talk a little bit more about this a little bit later. And it's the use of pronouns. There's been a rather dramatic change in our culture that I believe it's one of the greatest tools that they have. So an oft-repeated mantra among this view is that gender is not binary. It's a spectrum. So man and woman, that's not good enough. What follows from this view is that not that we need to tear down the pink and blue boxes, rather we simply need to recognize there are many more boxes than just two. Now, I think I would agree that there are more boxes out there. And as I've said, you know, we do have a spectrum in a sense, again, that people are big, people are small, people are athletic, people aren't, people are pretty, people are. I mean, and they aren't. I mean, it goes on and on. We do have a broad spectrum, but we still have men and women. Physiologically, one really cannot truly debate with this. There are some scientific evidence that, I mean, it's interesting that 15 or 20 years ago, the argument seemed to be over that men and women are exactly the same. So there are certain scientific things that were discovered. Now, I don't have time to get into all these. Oxytocin in men and women, it's different. And it works with women and men in a very different way. I was reading it with Judy, and she says, "Now you're not gonna share this in the group with the group." She says, "I don't want the thing to be an X-rated thing." And it would be if I shared you all the stuff. But I mean, you can study it. But there's differences. We're not the same. Women tend to be more communicative. I mean, we all understand that that's not always true. I mean, you know, that makes me pretty female, I guess, when you look at it that way. I mean, because I understand that I'm just as communicative as most of my female friends. So, I mean, well, there are distinctions, but they tend to be. And this was done through research where they actually counted how many words a woman says in a day versus men. And it always seems to end up that you ladies say more words. So I can't believe you'd outdo me, but anyway. Difference between the male and female brain. There are distinctions. Men are more likely to stutter than are women. That's kind of interesting. I didn't know that one. Men are more likely to have reading disorders than women. And those of you who are in education and you deal with kids who have some sort of developmental problems, I'd be interested in hearing what some of your personal observation would be in this regard. Women are prone to insomnia more than men. And the point that this is really making is not so much that women don't sleep as well as men. It's that women need their sleep more than men. And so they have insomnia because they're constantly worried. Those who do have this kind of problem amongst women are worried about not being able to sleep. And so it's more of an issue for men than women. And brain studies have been done to do these things. Now, there's something that happened here not too long ago that just shows you the semi-absurdity of this whole thing. It's what we call the Kate effect. This was, you know, Princess Kate or whatever her title is, but she married to one of the royals. And they had this big announcement. And they announced that they were going to have a girl. Now, the people who advocate this position that we're talking about, they were, their group of people and those that were their spokesmen made the point, stop calling the royal baby a girl. Because that should be her decision. Now see, now I want us to understand this because what we've been really trying to address in this regard is this whole bathroom issue and how has it been presented to us. Someone should be able to go into a bathroom if they think they're a certain sex. If they think it. Again, I'm not trying to get us all caught up in some of these social issues. Again, sometimes you're just going to have to accept that we're always going to have things like this happening. But again, I want us to understand these things are presented in a way to where what the Bible teaches about men and women is not really that important. There are more important things. And this is, I think, is kind of interesting because the recent phenomenon of sex declaring parties, and we've had a couple here. You know, we have a party and you announce what the baby is. And those are really bad. Just want you to understand, because what you're doing is you're taking away from that child the right of deciding who he or she is. Now, you know, we laugh about these things, and I mean, it seems kind of silly, but that's where we are in this culture, and this is how this is really promoting a lot of these issues related to the lesbian, gay community and the transgender community. It's all an attempt to legitimize those. Now, again, will it happen that the society is legitimizes these things? Probably. I don't really think that any large upheaval is going to cause any things to come to a halt, but we need to be aware of it. These are rather new events, but they're already being very scrutinized for the same reason. And it all relates to, if you think, again, about the restroom issue, it's if a person thinks he's a male, then he should be able to go into the male, even if it's a she or vice versa. So that's, and those of you who follow this understand this has been going on for a while. Now, there was a Harvard president, her name's Drew Gilpin Faust, replaced a guy named Larry Summers who dared suggest that there were some apparent differences between men and women. He had given this lecture where he talked about women in engineering and science, and was just sort of pointing out that women and men seem to have things that they are a little bit stronger in than others. They're just a difference. And I think the poor guy just thought this was a very innocent thing. But he's a part of what's evil. If you see and you think of those differences. Well, the new president of Harvard set off on a gender equity campaign. First, she restructured the business school, installing stenographers to remind professors that they were being watched for gender bias. They also began to check to see if there was bias in the pattern of grading males and females. They were also checking to see if males and females were called on equally in class. These kind of things have been going on for a while, but this was what she did when she became president. She was going to undo the stuff that this guy, I mean, he had not created any real problems. All he'd done is said what he had said. In 2016, she all but banned single-sex clubs on campus, and these are like fraternities and sororities. That's what we're talking about here. She sent out an email announcement to all students informing them that if they maintain a membership in men-only or women-only groups. Now, again, they weren't completely banning the groups, but they would be barred from leadership positions in student groups and captaincies of sports teams, as well as ineligible for school endorsement and scholarships such as the Rhodes Scholarship. That's if you belong to anything that was all male or all female. So that's tells you at the places where the powers to be, this is the way the thinking is developing. The school's dean sent out his own email. The discriminatory membership policies of these organizations, that's the single-sex clubs, have led to the perpetuation of spaces that are rife with power imbalances. The most entrenched of these spaces send an unambiguous message that they are the exclusive preserves of men. I mean, I know what he's saying is, I know we got men's group, I know we got women's group, but it's the men's group that are really the problem. In their recruitment practices and through their extensive resources and access to networks of power, these organizations propagate exclusionary values that undermine those of the larger Harvard College community. All right, now. That's just an example of the kind of stuff that is going on. And there are places where it's not going on, but it's certainly back on the East Coast and the Ivy League schools, this kind of thinking has become very, very dominant. Again, I'm not saying that we're going to be able to change the world in this regard, but what I am saying is that our children are going to be hearing a lot of these things. And certainly I know our children are going to be hearing a lot about this whole restroom issue. And we need to be able to do the best we can to be able to talk to them about it. And try to help them to understand as best you can that we are men and women and there are separations that need to be made. And again, there are a lot of women's groups who have, you know, really tried to almost make the same claim, you know, that men are dominating the society. And so something needs to be done about it. So we need to be given special rights. But what, you see what's happening here for them? What's happening is all these things that they fought for to get special consideration are now really being taken away from them. And so we got sports for girls. They deserve to have them. And I totally agree. But now, of course, boys are now making application to play on the girls' teams. You know, it was kind of interesting when it was the other way around. But that's what's happening. And so what happens? Who's going to lose an opportunity for a scholarship? It's going to be a woman if she can't beat out the guy. So there's a real difficult place that it's put a lot of people that might not agree with us about the role of men and women, but this is where this thing is turning. It's turning to where a lot of the things that women have tried to advocate and to gain in a society so there'd be more justice for them, because of this sexless world that these people are advocating. And again, I don't want to beat this dead horse too much. I just want us to understand that is what the restroom issue is all about. And I know what we're told. It's about people getting beat up in bathrooms. I get that. But that's not what this is really about. It's a much larger issue than that. Now, we've talked about vocabulary as we bring this to a close. It maybe is the most powerful tool. These pronouns, he, she, her, him, need to be gone. Need to be gone. Now, some of you might notice, Judy notices all this time because she's a bit of a grammar person. I'll give you an example of how this works. A no he or a no she example. Someone ran across the field. All right, now, someone is what? How many is someone? That's one person, right? Okay. Someone ran across the field, and since we can't say he or she, we say they. And this is commonly done. If you listen to people doing the news, they'll be referring to one person. They'll never refer to that person as a man or a woman in the use of a pronoun. They'll always refer to that one person as a they. Because we don't know what to do now. I mean, you know, the way it was in the old days, someone ran across the field, and the way it was in the traditional way, it was, and he fell into a hole. And that was because everybody understood that this was some sort of generic he, and it was used to describe that. But we can't even say, even though someone may say, well, see, that's the problem right there. It's that use of that he, and that's why men dominate the world. So it's changing the language, is what I'm getting at. And it's amazing if you go through and look at some of these books, at some of the suggestions that they have for pronouns to be used. I mean, it's just a totally different system. And again, that's not the end of the world, that things change and that things develop. But the desire to make sure we don't make this distinction between man and woman has turned the use of pronouns into something that certainly doesn't fit with the way it's properly grammatical. But it's a desire to avoid referring to people with pronouns that distinguish them male and female. Now, So you ask this. This is a reasonable question, at least for me. How do we get to the point of where we determine to undo even nature's reality? I mean, we've definitely evolved, if you understand the way this issue has gone, particularly from the point of view of marriage between people of the same sex. And we understand how that was discussed and how that was argued. But how do we get to the point where we think that we can actually undo what really truly separates us, men and women? Well, you cannot avoid thinking about Romans, the first chapter, when Paul is talking there about the corruptness of Gentile culture. Verse 21 of chapter 1, he says, even though they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. Therefore, God gave them over in the lust of their hearts to impurity, so that their bodies would be dishonored among them. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. Now, I realize that was written 2,000 years ago, and it was going on then, and it's going on now. So, I get that. For those of you who say, well, you know, these, it's just the way it is, and these are maybe political issues. This isn't political. This is cultural, and we need to be at least informed. And I feel I have a responsibility to at least let you know, that, you know, what is out there for those of you who may not follow these things. And as I said, we may not be able to do anything to change what might be considered a really bad thing here. And again, my thought is we probably won't. But as we understand that we are different people, I believe we need to understand that we do subscribe to the idea that there is a difference between men and women. And that's okay, and that's a good thing. And this idea that in order to empower women, somehow this has to all be brought together to where we're all just the same. Certainly not part of what nature is. It's interesting to see things. If you watch, I've noticed this, if you watch a cop show now, and let's just say there's a lady who's, one of the lead people in the show. And there's a chase. Okay. They start chasing the criminal. I promise you, if it's a lady chasing a criminal, she will catch him. I promise you. Now, if it's an old guy, I promise you what will happen. He is not going to catch. And he'll be over to the side, huffing and puffing. And this lady, very talented and great runner, then she, after she catches the person, I promise you what? She will not lose the fight. She will win. It's just TV, I get that. But, you know, there's a reason for it. That we're just not different. That properly trained, every woman can be that way. They can be just as strong as a man. Properly trained, a man can be sensitive enough to be very much like a woman. God intended for us to be different. And we're supposed to treat one another with high respect. And we're supposed to try to empower one another to be the best people we can be. But to tear down the basic fundamental of creation. Again, we're not talking about gay marriage here. We're talking about men and women. These advocates of these particular concepts are determined to tear down that construct, as it's called. And they just may do it. But know it and understand it and protect your children to the best of your ability when you have that opportunity. So I never thought I would have a lesson entitled God Created People as Women and Man that would be considered controversial. And I realize this is probably controversial for some. I don't in any way desire to make fun of anyone, but we need to defend who God is and what God did. And do the best we can to help our culture be as good as it can be. But if we can't, and we try to do the best we can to protect ourselves. So make yourself aware of some of these things, and again, think of your children and think of the things that they need to know about who we are and what we are and what the Bible teaches about men and women and what is going on now to try to totally undo that. It may happen too. So where are we going to be? It's going to be a challenge, that's for sure. We've seen that God had intention of man and woman being together to bless one another, not be the same, but to work in a way that builds up the other. That's what he always intended. That's how it was in the beginning. Have there been flaws along the way? Absolutely. Have there been abuses? For sure. But to totally deny what is natural, totally deny it, is something that we have to understand is not right. And it can't be honored. Thank you for putting up with me tonight. I really do appreciate it. I hope it at least makes you think about it, even if you haven't agreed with some of the things that I've said. Mitch is going to lead us in a song to teach us that there's always the invitation to be obedient to Christ. And sin is always ready to be forgiven. But we certainly have to be able to acknowledge that we do have sin. And if you're prepared to do that, we have a loving God that's ready to accept you, man or woman, accepting you with all your struggles, whatever it may be, and willing to lift you up to be what you were created to be. And it all happens through Jesus. Please come as we stand and sing. Mitch?
While the light from the throne shines for you and me, let us listen to the call of love. Zion's call is ringing, coming from the throne above. While we hear it ringing, let us heed the call of love. On the road to the goal, burdens we must bear, but we have help from realms above. We receive courage new when we kneel in prayer. Let us listen to the call of love. Zion's call is ringing, coming from the
be seated.